The airing of this program by this station is not an endorsement or recommendation by the station of the products or services discussed in the program. The station does not guarantee the results of any investments made by a listener to this program.
Josh Pick is the Chief Investment Advisor with Aptus Wealth Management, a state-registered investment advisory firm. This program is sponsored by Aptus Wealth Management. Exposure to ideas and financial vehicles discussed should not be considered investment advice or recommendation to buy or sell financial vehicle. This information should not be considered tax or legal advice. Individuals should consult with professionals to see if any ideas expressed would fit their specific situation. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results. Securities can fluctuate and when redeemed may be more or less than when originally invested.
Hi, everybody. Welcome into the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show. I'm Bruce Hooley here with Josh Pick of Aptus Wealth Management. And for the next hour, we'll be talking about how you can grow your money, not your savings, your investments. You got to invest. You can't just save to keep up with rising costs. You understand that. Certainly, we are in an inflationary time where just saving does not do it. You've got to invest, and there's no better place to invest your money than with a fiduciary, someone who is legally obligated to do what is best for you. That is what they are at Aptus Wealth Management. They're located in Lewis Center, just off Route 750, not far from the 270 and 23 interchange. Josh, great to have you back. And we'll be talking today about Jerome Powell, the Fed chairman. I don't know, are you too young to remember the old E.F. Hutton commercials on TV? Or do you remember the E.F. Hutton commercials on TV?
Well, I will say that I have seen them, but it's not because I remember them from when I was a kid.
Okay. I don't know if E.F. Hutton still exists or not, but back in the day, there was an investment banking, investment, you know, firm called E.F. Hutton, and they would show commercials of a crowded restaurant, high end, everybody dressed to the nines, you know, businessmen, high finance people. And one guy in particular would start talking, and everybody around the room would stop talking, and the whole thrust of the commercial was when E.F. Hutton talks, people listen. Well, when Jerome Powell, the head of the Fed, talks, people listen. And he was talking today, December the 1st, on Friday, and he says that the central bank, that's the Fed, needs to see more evidence that inflation is on the way back to its 2% target, because he thinks that maybe people are starting to assume that the Fed is done raising rates. But nevertheless, Josh, the markets really liked what he had to say today because he referenced that inflation is coming down. And so they're kind of, to me, more reading between the lines of what he said than what he actually said. What's your take on it and your take on the reaction of the markets?
I think that's always the case. You know, the Fed is rather coy sometimes in what they're saying and rather cryptic. So on one hand, you have somebody saying things in a way that isn't really clear and concise. And then on the other hand, you have a bunch of people trying to interpret what that person is saying. But I think there were a couple of things that they said that were pretty clear. One was they don't expect that they will need to raise rates anymore in the near future, but they would not rule out the possibility of it. And the reason that they said that they wouldn't need to raise rates anymore was because unemployment numbers are actually climbing, which one would think is a bad thing. But remember, the Fed is trying to cool off the economy and lower inflation. So believe it or not, raising unemployment is one way of doing that. The supply chain seems to be catching up. And anybody who's looking to buy a car right now has kind of seen that. You know, they're not as sparse as they once were. So I think, you know, the belief is that things are going in the right direction. And then if you look at the market, what does the market hate? Well, the market loves solidarity. It hates rate hikes because that's a drag on companies to try and grow. So, you know, it's not shocking that when that news, it's kind of like no news is good news. We're not going to do anything. Probably the market liked it.
Yeah. And obviously, if you have to manage a household at all, everybody's familiar with the fact that inflation has been sky high here for a long period of time, got up as high as 9.1% year over year, but it has been coming down. Now, the Fed doesn't look at the inflation rate that most Americans take note of, because that particular rate doesn't, I think, include food and energy. They have another metric they look at called the core inflation rate, and it clocked in at 3.5% for the month of October, down from 3.7% in September, and it was 4.3% back in June. So I understand why the markets like this in tandem with what Jerome Powell had to say, because it does look like things are aligning and aligning in a good way. We have had really good numbers here out of the markets here lately. I think NASDAQ, the S&P 500, all with really, really good numbers. What has been the trend here lately with the November numbers in the stock market? We talked about the markets liking the numbers today. Really, this is kind of a phenomenon that's continued since November. What have the markets seen that they've really liked in the month of November?
You know, I would say that the market is compartmentalized. The market as a whole doesn't necessarily like everything that they're hearing, but there are certain companies that have a significant representation in the markets that are benefiting greatly from, you know, whether it's innovation or, you know, purchases escalating. But ultimately, you know, when you look at any of these decisions that the Fed's making and what impact they have on the economy, it's kind of like working out. You know, I mean, you go to the gym, you don't actually see the benefits of it for a long period of time. And you can't make your decisions based upon, we made a decision today, we worked out today, how come I'm not ripped tomorrow? Well, same thing with the Fed. You know, the reason why the Fed is saying we'll probably hold back on the rate hikes is because they are seeing the numbers going in the right direction. And the last thing they want to do is get too overzealous with their rate hikes. And all of a sudden, the train kind of left the station and we can't slow it down and we end up in a recession. Now, the Fed seems to think that we have effectively created a soft landing. The markets seem to like what the Fed has done and not getting a little too aggressive with the rate hikes. Volatility has still been kind of the name of the game for the year. And although, you know, November was a pretty darn good month in the market, if we go back and look at, you know, October right before that, well, you might have a different opinion. You look at September right before that and you look at January and February, and it's volatility has been the name of the game, but we've ended up pretty strong. I wouldn't really sound the alarm bells yet and saying that we're heading into recession, but I also don't think that you can say when you had a year last year like we had and barely being back to a break-even point, if you look over the past, you know, 23 months, I don't think we can say everything is rosy and peachy. But I don't necessarily agree with some of the other stuff that we're hearing. You know, Jamie Dimon, for example, our little hometown hero here from JP Morgan, saying, I don't know what anybody's talking about as a soft landing. You know, batten down the hatches, it's going to get really ugly. The answer is probably somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, as is often the case, he is Josh Pickies with Aptus Wealth Management. That's Josh's firm. It's located off Route 750 in Lewis Center, and they offer you a free no-obligation consultation. You can set that up by calling their office, 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040. You can also make your appointment for that free consultation online. Their web address is Aptus Wealth, A-P-T-U-S, aptuswealth.com. Very easy to get to. And Josh does service clients outside the area. Our remote hookups that we all gained through the pandemic certainly have allowed him to do that. But we'd like to meet you in person for that in-person consultation if you are in Central Ohio. Again, to set it up, 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040. Yeah, the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ in November had their biggest monthly gain since July of 2022. So that's a year and a half. The Dow rallied to close at its highest level since January of 2022. So those numbers are promising. What did you make then of Jamie Dimon's comments, the CEO of JP Morgan Chase, saying, you know, not so fast, my friend. He doesn't seem too convinced that a sunnier skies are on the horizon.
Well, I think, you know, if you look at, you know, we had an offline, we had a conversation about how come economists can't seem to get to a unified perspective on, and you could say economists, you could say bankers, you could say investment professionals, et cetera. And it's because there are so many variables that ultimately impact the economy. So we look at things through different lenses. Now, I'm not going to speak for Jamie Dimon, but let's say, for example, he's looking at interest rates and what impact that could potentially have on housing as one metric. Well, you could talk to 97 different mortgage brokers, realtors, experts in the housing area, and half of them will say the housing market is going to do nothing but continue to go up. And others will say the impact of high interest rates and the fact that housing starts are picking up have not quite hit the system yet, but prepare for a decent pullback in the housing market. Well, there's just one piece of the economy that nobody can agree on. Now extrapolate that out over, well, what about interest rates as it relates to savings? Well, if people can get a 6% CD, which we're not there yet, but I think we're getting close. If you can get a 6% CD and the market is volatile, how many people are going to forego investing in the market and put their money in a CD. Well, what kind of impact does that have on the stock market? You know, the stock market is based upon underlying companies and the valuations of those companies and the virility of those companies and the future profitability. But they're also, those stock prices are based upon supply and demand. And if people don't want a demand for those stocks, rest assured their price will go down irrespective of what the stock is worth. So there's two variables. And it all depends on which 15 you're looking at out of the 2,000 you could be looking at. And maybe Jamie Dimon is looking and saying, you know, the impact of high interest rates and inflation has not been licked. And all we're doing is foregoing the inevitable. And ultimately, we're going to pay for the, you know, what some say is ineptitude of COVID spending that we did. We will end up paying for that. And while I would love to see us coming for a soft landing, I just simply don't know if it's the case.
Yeah, I mean, there are a ton of metrics out there. And every time you hear one in particular that I hear is, you know, people's reliance on credit cards. And to me, that doesn't seem like sound financial strategy at all. And you're right. Maybe Jamie Dimon is looking at one thing and somebody else who's an analyst values something else. Sit down with Josh and the Aptus team and find out their approach to investing. They want to find out your approach to investing. My wife and I sat for the consultation. We became Aptus clients. We're very, very satisfied with the performance of our investments with Aptus Wealth Management, so much so that we have recommended them to many of our friends. And some of our friends have also become clients at Aptus. They're under no obligation at all. Meet with them, have your consultation, set it up by calling their office, 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040, their web address, where you can also make your appointment, is Aptus Wealth, APTUS, Aptus Wealth. .com. All right, so Jamie Dimon's a name everybody knows. Obviously, Warren Buffett is a name everybody knows. But the people who are really dialed in on legendary investors also know the name Charlie Munger. And while a lot of the headlines this week focused understandably on the death of Henry Kissinger, who's a legendary diplomat at the age of 100 years old, Charlie Munger lived a long, fruitful, and very bountiful life, as he was Warren Buffett's right-hand man, wingman, and he died at the age of 99. And there's been a lot of looking back on Charlie Munger and the wisdom that he brought to the investing world, and also maybe the credit that he isn't well known for in terms of the success that Warren Buffett has had as an investor.
Yeah, you know, Warren Buffett has many, many times said that Berkshire Hathaway would not exist as it exists today without Charlie Munger. And for those of you who don't know who Charlie Munger is, really, quite literally, Warren Buffett's right-hand man. Charlie was an attorney, childhood friends. You know, he really helped Warren take Berkshire Hathaway big. That was his fundamental contribution to Berkshire Hathaway. Was Warren at the time, when they really kind of solidified the relationship, was really making profitable bets on a small scale. And Charlie showed him how to extrapolate that onto a large scale. So, you know, Charlie in his own right was a very astute investor, very responsible for some of Berkshire Hathaway's picks. I believe the estimates are when Charlie died, he was worth somewhere between $2 and $3 billion. But still, much like Warren Buffett, lived in a small house. Now, I tell you all this stuff just to give you background, but I think what really Charlie was known for was his difference of attitude versus Warren Buffett. You know, Warren Buffett is kind of known as a gregarious, funny, you know, play a ukulele at the conference kind of guy. He's known for some really funny, you know, you don't know who's swimming naked till the tide goes out kind of metaphors. Really interesting guy. But Charlie, on the other hand, is that uncle at the at Thanksgiving that just shoots you straight, right?
And he's plain spoken, you could say, correct?
Yeah. I mean, even, you know, I would say every conference that they had at Berkshire Hathaway, at one point, Charlie could get Warren to defend him, you know, like, easy, Charlie. What Charlie's really trying to say, because he just would fire. I mean, one of the famous things that he said is, you know, one thing that's big in the financial world is the term EBITDA, which means earning before taxes, interest, amortization, right? So that's what companies are based upon. And Charlie said at a national, this is very recent, said in a meeting that he believes that we would all be better off as a culture if every time somebody said EBITDA, they would just replace it with BS accounting. So, I mean, he was just a really interesting guy. Now, you might be wondering, why am I telling you this whole story? Well, one, I think, you know, it would really behoove you to go and do some just, you know, peripheral investigating on some of the wisdom that Charlie bestowed, because he really is as powerful as Warren in giving you some guidelines for your investing life. But beyond that, prior to his death, both Warren and Charlie said that there is one thing. And remember, these are people who are exclusively stock investors. I mean, that's what they're in. They are stock investors who believe in long-term hold periods. Matter of fact, Warren Buffett is famous for saying, my average hold time for a stock, my anticipation is forever. So, I mean, we're talking about long-term stock investors. They said something very contrarian to that ideology. Not that they said you should invest your money in stocks, but recently both of them were quoted and saying that, you know, as we look forward, the U.S. economy is not going to perform at the same level that it has for the last several decades. We've just reached a point in our economy where things are going to start to slow. Now, that wasn't warning bells or saying don't invest in stocks, but what it really was saying is you need to start looking at various asset classes for diversification. And one word that they said, and I quote, is you need to start looking at recession-resistant assets. So if you believe even a piece of what Jamie Dimon said, and you then correlate that with what I would say some of the most optimistic people on the planet are in the way of Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger as it relates to the U.S. economy, what they're saying is in the short run, it could be kind of a tumultuous time where you better know what you're doing. And I think you should heed those warnings. So, you know, we can start talking about what are some of those asset classes and how does one diversify amongst recession-isk proof investing.
Well, and I think, you know, this is as long as I can ever remember being interested in investing, this is kind of what we've done. We've consulted experts who have a track record of success. I mean, I remember when I first started my professional career in the late 1980s, it was very common where you'd subscribe to a newsletter and you'd get a guy's stock picks in the mail like every month or every week. So makes sense to me that we would pay attention to some of the parameters that a Warren Buffett and a Charlie Munger would have employed to get to the point where they're both billionaires. And that's obviously what you're doing when you go with Aptus Wealth Management. You're going with somebody who's been at it a long time, who's got a track record of success, somebody who in Josh and his team are fiduciaries legally obligated to do what's best for you. Set up your consultation with them, no obligation at all to become clients, just to get to know them and to find out their approach to investing. And they want to gauge your risk to your stomach for investing and how you view it and what your risk tolerance is. You can set that up 614-917-1040, or you can go online and set it up on their website at Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. They're located in Lewis Center, which is not far from the 270-23 interchange, right off Route 750. So when you were saying recession-proof investments, the first one that I think of is land. Doesn't necessarily have to have a house on it, but it's land. But would that be an example of recession-proof investing? Because we're seeing, you know, we've seen housing prices skyrocket, but we've also seen periods in 2008 where housing prices fell through the floor.
Land's always a great investment. So what I'm about to tell you is not negating that fact, but there are some challenges with land. For example, if you're looking at retirement, what does land provide you? Now, theoretically, it could provide you some earnings off of renting the land out to a farmer who then in turn grows corn and soybeans on the land, right? So you're getting rental income. However, if you look at land prices today, they're definitely high. Yep. And if you look at, you know, what you can lease that land for a farming value, they're not quite as high as we would like to see. And then if you don't have a farmer renting that property, well, now you have carrying costs of the land. So not only is it not providing you an income, but it's actually costing you money to hold. And there's definitely a couple ways you can invest in land. You can invest for income, or you can invest in the way of speculation where you say, I think urban sprawl is going to reach this point at some point. They're going to put in an interchange here and my land is going to be worth, you know, it's going to be liquid gold, right? But, you know, and again, I'm not trying to shift you away from land, but I think sometimes we see what happened to an asset class and go, man, I really wish I would have got in back then. And now I'm going to go in buy now. And I really don't have any level of expertise in the thing I'm about to buy. And I think that's really what Charlie and Warren were saying, is that in order to invest, matter of fact, Charlie's also famous in saying that you shouldn't have as much diversification. that you should really dwell on the decisions you make, because you only need to make about 10 good decisions in your lifetime to become incredibly wealthy. So, you know, when Charlie died, I think, and don't quote me on this, I think he owned two stocks. One was Berkshire Hathaway, which you could argue is actually owning many stocks. And the other one was Costco. And that's it. That's all he owned. And, you know, you could argue, well, maybe that's a foolhardy way of doing it. But Berkshire Hathaway, since 1965, averaged north of 20% a year, which good luck trying to find something that did that. So maybe we should listen to what they're saying. And all I'm trying to explain is, before you make decisions, take time, think of the pros and cons, become an expert in that field, or elicit an expert to help you, which is exactly what people did with Berkshire Hathaway and what people do with my company, Aptus Wealth Management. But don't make rash decisions just because you have a fear of missing out on an asset class that's done well over the last several years.
So what would be some examples that Berkshire Hathaway or Charlie Munger or Warren Buffett would deem to be recession-proof investments?
Yeah, so I'll talk about some that they deem to be and then some that I think we should add to the list. If you look at the Berkshire Hathaway brand as a whole, they're definitely a value-based investor. So they're buying companies which they believe they're buying at a good price. But they also believe they have a huge barrier to entry and are, quote, recession-proof. So let me give you some examples of companies that they own. Geico Insurance. Now, whether the economy is doing good or bad, you have to buy insurance if you're driving a car. So that's a pretty good investment. We could argue that doesn't really matter what the recession is. If there's one thing that we learned from COVID, it doesn't matter how little money you have, you're going to buy toilet paper. So buy companies that do that. Coca-Cola is a huge holding of Berkshire Hathaway. Heinz Ketchup is a huge holding. I mean, are you really going to skimp on the little nickel, you know, half a penny packet, right, of Heinz Ketchup? Probably not. We could add to that list, though. And, you know, Goldman Sachs had an article, I believe it was this past week, echoing this, saying that, you know, one thing that we have going for us in this volatile economy is, believe it or not, hedging your stocks has not been as cheap as it is today in the better part of a decade. And what I mean by that is you have the ability to buy an option called a put to say, if my stocks go the other direction, can I put a stop loss on it? So I think the market's going to do really well, and I hope I'm right. But if I'm wrong and it goes the other direction, boy, wouldn't it be nice if I could say, once this thing turns the other direction by, you know, I start losing 5%, I'm out. I've already put a put there, I'm protected, and I'm good. And the price of doing that is less than about 0.5%. So if you think about it, I think the market's going to go up 20. If it does, I'm only up 19.5. If it goes the other direction, I protected myself dramatically and it only cost me less than 0.5%. There are a myriad of ways of doing that. Now, I'm not suggesting that everybody needs to do that with all of their money, but depending on where you are on the time continuum of retirement, that may sound like a very valuable and comforting thing to know, that I don't want to be one of those people that was about ready to retire in 2001 during the dot-com crisis, and my 401k turned into a 201k, and I said, well, I guess I got to work for another 5 or 10 years, right? If you could buy a small amount of insurance to make sure that didn't happen, would you do it? If the answer is yes, well, good news, you're in a great environment to be able to do that.
Yeah, and I mean, true confession, folks, that is what really opened my eyes during my consultation with Josh. My wife and I were sitting there and, you know, I was well aware that we needed to be invested in something that would grow our money at a faster rate than we could get from just a simple savings or a money market. What I did not know is exactly the kind of concept that Josh just outlined for you, which is that you can have your money in certain investment vehicles that give you a portion of the upside of the market, a very good portion of the upside of the market, with protecting you, and you're more, you get a bigger chunk of the upside and a lesser chunk of the downside, which sounds like, well, you'd be a fool not to take that. Well, yeah, that's what I thought too. And that's why we became Aptus clients, and they lay it all out for you. It's very easy to understand, and there's no, you know, sleight of hand or anything. There's no pressure. So I would highly recommend you sit for your free consultation in their offices in Lewis Center, just off Route 750. Set it up online, 614-917-1040 is their office number, Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com. We appreciate your time joining us today here on the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show. We being me, Bruce Hooley, and our weekly expert on financial matters, investment matters, Josh Pick of Aptus Wealth Management. They are located in Lewis Center, Aptus Wealth, right off Route 750, easy to get to from 270 and 23. And I would highly recommend you take advantage of the free no obligation consultation that they offer you as a potential client, because it is no obligation. Set that up by calling their office, 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040. You can also make your appointment at their website, and you will find them on the web at aptuswealth.com, aptuswealth.com, A-P-T-U-S, aptuswealth.com. And Josh, as we near the end of the year, it is typical for people to wonder, is there anything I need to do before December the 31st that I will regret not doing if I get to January the 1st? So these are probably questions that you get when you're out and about, not just when you're at work, because people who know what you do. So what is maybe one of the things at the top of the list that you would ask people as to whether or not they have considered it, or as to whether or not they have completed it as we near the end of the year?
And once we get past all of the, you know, make sure you've contributed to your 401k, if you're eligible for an HSA, you should do it. Do you want to contribute to an IRA to help reduce your tax liability? All those kind of general things that I'm sure everybody knows about. Once you get closer and closer to retirement or are in retirement, a buzzword or a concept that always rises to the surface is something called Roth conversions. And I think conceptually, a lot of people know what they are, but they get kind of analysis paralysis on whether or not I should do it. Because I can, you know, Google it right now and I'll get 50 responses that say it's the best thing. Everybody should do it no matter what. And then there's 50 responses that says not so fast. Maybe you should take a deeper look. So let's kind of cover what it is and what are some things that you should look out for. First, a Roth conversion is simply taking all of that pre-tax money that you had saved up. So 401k, 403b, IRA, et cetera, and you've put all the money into that pre-tax. It's been growing tax deferred. But the problem with it is at some future date, you're going to want to probably live on some of this money. Or if you don't want any of the money at some future date, the IRS is going to force you to start taking money out of it, because every nickel you take out is taxable. Now, that's a first world problem. But a lot of times what we see is people having to take out more money from their IRAs than they would like to, and ultimately paying taxes on that money that they wouldn't have had to pay if they were able to do some planning and get that money out of that qualified plan. And the way that you do that is through what's called a Roth conversion. The Roth conversion means that I'm going to take IRA pre-tax money, pay taxes on it today, but then once I put it in the Roth, every gain in that account forevermore will be tax-free as long as I leave it in there for 5 years. So, you know, that conceptually makes a lot of sense. And there's a lot of reasons why you would want to do that beyond just the tax piece. For example, there's a 50-50 shot, unfortunately, that you and I, Bruce, will end up needing some help at the end of our life via long-term care. Well, one of the benefits of a Roth IRA is at some point in the future, if I want to, quote, protect that money by doing trust work with an attorney, making it look like maybe I don't have as much money as I do so that Medicaid picks up the tab a little sooner than they otherwise would. Well, I can move that money directly into a trust because I've already paid the taxes on the money. So it's an easy flip. Whereas if I had it in my IRA, I've yet to find anybody who says, I'd really like to protect my IRA. I'm going to pay taxes on $1 million tomorrow so I can put it in trust. So maybe it will be protected in the long run. So there are ancillary reasons why you'd want to do it beyond just the tax reasons. But here's the problem. Almost every calculator you look at online will just simply look at your tax bracket and say, does it make sense? And the theory of all of these calculators, and the theory of what probably most of your listeners are hearing right now, is, well, should I pay 22% in taxes today so I don't have to pay 32% tomorrow? Or should I pay 12% today so I don't have to pay 22% tomorrow? And that is undoubtedly the logic pattern on what you should do. However, there's two other moving parts in there for most people that they're not considering. And those two parts are the taxes that apply to my Social Security and the potential impact that doing a Roth conversion has on how much I pay for Medicare. And that term is called IRMA. So if you've ever heard IRMA, it means the amount of income that you're allowed to make to that criteria is how much you pay for Medicare. So for example, Medicare this year was about $165 for every person in the United States. However, if you were one of the people that made $500,000 or more, your cost of Medicare is about four times that amount. So obviously pretty significant difference. So what you need to do is say, well, first, if I do a Roth conversion, how much does that impact my Social Security? Am I not only paying 12% in taxes on my conversion, but it's actually drawing money over from my Social Security that I wouldn't have to pay for? And now all of a sudden, it's not really costing me 12% of the money I'm converting. It's costing me 20% of the money I'm converting because more money became taxable. And then number two, am I exceeding any sort of thresholds for myself and my wife, or both, by taking too much money on a conversion that, sure, I'm only paying, good news, I'm only paying 22% in taxes now, I'm saving it, and I'm not going to pay 32 later, but now all of a sudden my monthly bill for Medicare just went up by $600 a month between my wife and I. Was it a good idea at that point? Now, all these things, Bruce, are very, maybe easy is the wrong word. They're capable of being calculated if you know what all of the factors are that you need to calculate in. But every single year, every client that we have that is in a position to do a Roth conversion, in November and December, every review we have, we run through a calculator that we've built here that just takes all of these things personally into account for you and decides, should you do a Roth conversion this year? If so, for what amount? What are the pros and cons? And, you know, whether really not just should you, but what is the exact dollar amount that you should do? So we really take the guesswork out of what is a great concept, but seems kind of like an insurmountable math problem.
Well, I'm not the least bit surprised that you guys are on top of that, because I've certainly found that to be my experience as an Aptus client. This is the Aptus Retirement Blueprint Radio Show. You wouldn't build a house without having a blueprint. You wouldn't just start nailing studs together and throwing up walls. No, you'd get an architect and you'd have plans. For something as important as your retirement, why would you not have a blueprint for that? That's what they call it at Aptus. They lay it all out for you. It's very easy to see, not just visually, but it's also easy to understand. Meet with them for your free consultation. Set it up by calling their office, 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040, or you can make your appointment online at aptuswealth.com. Aptuswealth.com is APTUS, aptuswealth.com. The show replays tomorrow at noon. So tell your friends, or you can listen to it again tomorrow at noon on Saturday. Okay, so you said something I wanted to follow up on. You said something about you get to a point where you're forced to take money out of your retirement accounts. I believe I'm correct that you're forced to take Social Security, aren't you, at age 67? If I'm wrong on that, please correct me, but when is someone forced to begin taking money out of their retirement accounts?
Okay, well, I will have to correct you, unfortunately. 67 is what's called the full retirement age, which means that is when Social Security kind of arbitrarily deems that you have reached full retirement and you will get the full benefit from your Social Security. However, that benefit will continue to grow if you don't take it until you reach age 70. So there's really no benefit to waiting past 70. That's the required age, if you will. So I certainly wouldn't wait past then. But as far as minimum required distributions, it's kind of been a little bit of a moving target. So the concept is, once you reach a certain age, the IRS has allowed you to kick the can on taxes on your qualified plans for a long period of time. So at some point, they're going to require you to start taking a minimum required distribution out of your accounts so that they can get some of their tax dollars. And that used to be 70 and a half, which was kind of a random arbitrary number. The Secure Act 1.0, which was just called the Secure Act, changed it to 72. Then the Secure Act 2.0 followed that very quickly and changed it to 73. Now, that's kind of shocking, quite frankly. You would think the IRS, and particularly as we look at the national debt, they would be eager to get their money. But really what they're accommodating is the fact that people are working longer and the savings rate is just not that strong. So people are forced to work longer. So we can't force them to send us money. For example, here's some stats that are, you know, we were talking about Jamie Dimon in the previous episode and saying he doesn't have a lot of optimism about the future of the economy. Maybe he's looking at these two stats. If you look at the country, less than 50% of the people in the country if forced, have an emergency fund account that they could tap of $2,000 or more. So if you want to know, are people kind of living their life on tilt? You use the term credit cards, but if are they living their life on tilt? You know, I would say that most people, by saying $2,000, have less than 1 month worth of reserve. But the other one, and why RMDs have gotten pushed out, is 42% of the population, and this is irrespective of age, has less than $10,000 in total retirement savings. So if you kind of look at the country as a whole, people are going to have to unfortunately work longer if you look at the average individual. So we had to kind of push minimum required distributions. Fortunately for younger folks, that is going to continue to push. So people aren't going to have to take RMDs until they're 75. Now, from a planning perspective, this is fantastic because here we are talking about Roth conversions. Well, the best time to do a Roth conversion for most people is between the time that they retire and the time that they are forced to take minimum required distributions. So if they keep on kicking the duration or the time frame when we have to take minimum required distributions, it's just opening up a larger window for planning. So this is actually a really, really good thing.
You can get a hold of Josh and the Aptus team by calling 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040. Again, their offices are located just off Route 750 in Lewis Center, which is not far from the 270 and 23 interchange. Okay, so here's a thing I thought of in terms of how to get around taking your required minimum distributions at age 73, which I'm sure won't work, but I might not be the only person thinking of it, so I'm going to throw it out there. Let's say you are, it's not uncommon for a husband to be a little bit older than the wife. Let's say you have a wife who is 5 years younger than you, and you have joint retirement, I guess. Is there a way for a husband who's still working, because I just saw today Al Michaels is doing like Amazon NFL games at age 80 or 79, and a lot of people are working longer. He doesn't want to take the money out of his retirement. Can he transfer it, the older husband, can he transfer it to the younger wife and delay the required minimum distribution by whatever their age gap is?
It certainly would be cool if you could, but no. But I will say one thing, and you know, leave judgment alone out of this. But if your wife or husband is 10 years older or younger than you, that is kind of a magic number in that there is a cross calculation that lowers your minimum required distribution, at least. So, you know, I guess there's one justification for, you know, people to marry people significantly younger than them, I suppose. I don't know.
Very good. Very good. That's good information to know. Is everybody eligible for a Roth IRA? Can anybody get a Roth IRA? Are there income levels that, you know, nope, sorry, the government says not eligible to you?
Yeah, great question. So there's two types of Roth IRAs. There's a Roth conversion, which means I'm taking existing qualified dollars and converting them to an IRA or to a Roth IRA. And the answer on that is no. You can make as much money as you want. You make $70 billion a year and still do a Roth conversion. But on a contributory Roth, there are income limits with an exception. If you work for an employer that does not have a retirement plan, then there are no income limits because everyone should be allowed to put money away favorably for retirement. However, if your employer does have a 401k, 403b, deferred comp, whatever it might be, then you do have income limits. And those income limits, kind of rough idea, is for a married couple, about 200 grand. Once you get to about 200 grand of combined income, you start to get phased out. And I'm rounding here dramatically, but just general guideline. You start to get phased out and you can't play the game anymore.
Very good. Very interesting and all great information. And those are the kinds of nuggets of information that you get when you are an Aptus Wealth client. Aptus Wealth Management, located in Lewis Center, 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040, to set up your free consultation with Josh and the team. Get to know them. Let them get to know you. And if you have friends outside the area and you think, hey, this sounds great, and they would like to become, you think they might like to become Aptus clients, yeah, they can service them remotely, certainly as clients. But the consultation, if you live in Central Ohio, they'd like to have you in the office so that the conversation can be a little bit more personal. But get a hold of Josh and the team, 614-917-1040, 614-917-1040. All right, your formula that you talked about, I'm sure, is set up to keep people from messing up their Roth conversion. Is there anything else you want to say about Roth? Because I've got an interesting study here from Dave Ramsey about millionaires that I wanted to get to with you, but I wanted to give you a chance to wrap up on Roth if there was anything left on the table.
Yeah, only one thing is my financial nerds out there are probably going, he didn't talk about this. There is one way. We were talking about the income limits, and you can't do a Roth IRA if you make too much money. There actually is a way to do a Roth IRA, even if you make too much money. And you'll hear it if you Google this or look it up. Terrible name, but they call it a backdoor Roth IRA. And the way that you do a backdoor Roth IRA is essentially you make a contribution to a traditional IRA because there are no income limits on that. And then remember, there's no income limits on conversion. So you take an extra step rather than sending it directly to the Roth. You send it to an IRA and convert it the next day, which is, you know, you might go, well, that's kind of silly. Why don't they just let you do it to begin with? Well, remember, and I know that your other show is very political, so you can attest to this. Everybody in Washington who's making all these rules obviously is infinitely wise and makes all the logical decisions. It doesn't make any sense, but just know that there is a way around that income threshold if you know how to do it.
Very good. And one thing I've learned from talking with Josh the past couple of years is that it's always a good idea to, number one, integrate your financial advisor with any big financial decision that you make in your life. Something as innocuous as buying a car. If you're in a position, you buy a boat, buy a house. I mean, it's always a good thing to talk with your financial advisor. And I certainly wouldn't make a major purchase without running it by Josh, because there are lots and lots of ways to do things. And unfortunately, that also means there are lots and lots of ways to do things wrong that cost you money that need not be necessarily applicable to you. So that's another benefit of having a fiduciary, somebody who is legally obligated to do what is best for you. And that is what they are at Aptus Wealth Management. All right, Dave Ramsey, a guy who is very popular, very well known. He has done a study, they say one of the largest studies, perhaps the largest study ever, of millionaires in U.S. and Canada, 10,000 millionaires. I know you're familiar with this study. What stood out to you from the study, Josh?
Yeah, well, first I'd like to say, while I deviate sometimes from Dave Ramsey's opinions, I agree with a lot of what he says. And I was really happy to see that he did such an all-encompassing study, because I think it dispelled some myths. I think this myth dispelment started with the Millionaire Next Door book, if you've ever read that, where, you know, millionaires aren't running around in Bugattis all the time. A lot of times they're driving, you know, Camrys and Ford F-150s, and they live right next door to you and live very modest, below their means. But this study of over 10,000 millionaires really dispelled a lot of, unfortunately, I guess, a little tough love. All of your excuses on why you can't do it, well, sorry. The study proved a lot of them wrong. For example, one that jumped off the page for me is one-third of millionaires never made $100,000 or more in income in any year in their entire life. So if you think that every millionaire is a millionaire because they make $1 million a year and they have all this expendable income to save, maybe not the case. The second one is, and I hear this all the time, well, I'd be a millionaire if I inherited it too. Well, unfortunately, 80% didn't inherit a nickel of anything that they received. Now, you can go further, though, and go, well, okay, well, that leaves 20%. Well, unfortunately, only 3% actually inherited $1 million or more. So we have to make the judgment that 97% of the people saved a significant chunk or all of their millions. And then last, and again, I think this is a big thing that all of us need to hear. I think sometimes we get in our own way and we say, well, you know, I'm not going to invest because what if I pick the wrong this? What if, you know, some investments are better than others? And those are true statements, by the way. But when asked what is more important, what you invest in or consistency, 3 out of 4 said, I've made tremendous amount of mistakes in my life in investing, but consistency is what got me to be wealthy, which is why 8 out of 10 of them contribute to their 401k. So if you're sitting there complaining about how you're not in a better financial position, but you're always coming up with excuses on why you can't save, or there's nothing to invest in, or rich people just inherited it, or they make a lot of money, sorry, none of those things are true. There was a follow-up, not a follow-up study, but there was a kind of a tandem study that I also liked. And I forgive me, I can't remember who did it, but it was the ways that millionaires view money that differ from the ways that non-millionaires view money. And I think this was pretty powerful. And it was a great way of saying something that I've said a lot in my office. And one of them is focusing on saving rather than managing expenses. So, and I'll give you kind of the way that this plays out in my office. People will come in and they'll go, here's my budget. Here's how much I can save based upon my budget. And usually in their budget, they've done what we all do. They pad the heck out of it, right? I mean, well, okay, so you're a family of two and your food budget is $6,000 a month. You guys must eat really well, right? I mean, I know you're padding it. Or they get kind of over the top when they say, well, here's my budget. I have $631 a month I can be saving. That's not the way real life works. We all know it. You're not going to save $631 a month. What millionaires typically do, and what people who are financially successful typically do, is they say, I'm going to start saving this dollar amount. And you would almost argue the dollar amount's pretty arbitrary. And then based upon what that looks like at the end of the month, I'll either tweak it up or down. But I'm not going to start with how much can I save. I'm just going to save. This is what I'm going to save. And I will manage my expenses around what I'm saving. And if you're listening to this saying, well, yeah, it must be nice. I'm raising a family of four. And I understand all of that. And I understand that not everybody is in a position to just save $2,000 a month. I totally understand that. But it's a paradigm shift in your brain to say, I'm going to pay myself first. And then I'm going to figure out the rest. And there's a great book about this called The Richest Man in Babylon that speaks about simply that. Pay yourself first. Also talks about tithing too. And then talks about live your life with what's left. The other thing that millionaires do that really jumped off the page to me, because I can see this in all of the clients that I have that are in fact millionaires, is focusing on growing your assets rather than exclusively protecting them. And what I mean by that is there are people who save money and then there are people who invest money. And there is a lion's share difference. Investors are not worried about what the account value is tomorrow. They're worried about what the future potential of is 10 years from now. And the people who become millionaires more often than not are the ones that can forego instant gratification, but also forego the pain of volatility in any investment, whether that's owning a pizza shop or owning a stock, and then letting the money do what it needs to do over time so that they have an asset base that will feed them for the rest of their life.
Yeah, it should be no surprise that Dave Ramsey, you know, and Josh and I have pounded these same principles, that it's consistency in investing. It's letting someone else invest for you. That's a 401k match if you're fortunate enough to work at a firm that does that. Just to reiterate some of those numbers that Josh threw at you there from the Dave Ramsey study, 8 out of 10 millionaires contribute to their 401k. Consistency in investing is more important than the actual investment is. Only one third of millionaires have ever made more than $100,000 per year. 80% of them got no inheritance. And as he said, if you're thinking, well, 20% got $1 million, no, only 3% of them inherited $1 million or more. Sit with Josh and the Aptus team, get these principles ingrained, follow them, follow the blueprint that they will work out for you. No obligation to the consultation. Set it up 614-917-1040 or Aptus Wealth, APTUS, aptuswealth.com.
The airing of this program by this station is not an endorsement or recommendation by the station of the products or services discussed in the program. The station does not guarantee the results of any investments made by a listener to this program.